thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight Black Voices. I'm Brandis Friedman. On the show tonight...
I have been the best president for the black population since Abraham Lincoln.
Trump visits the land of Lincoln for a Q&A with black journalists that quickly turns contentious.
This man should have never had a badge.
Growing calls for justice in the fatal shooting of Sonya Massey by a downstate sheriff's deputy. And what you should know about a summer surge in COVID cases with Chicago's public health commissioner. First off tonight, former President Donald Trump was in Chicago today for just the second time since massive protests forced him to scrap a rally in 2016 at the University of Illinois Chicago. Trump has often criticized Chicago, using it as a punching bag to attack Democrats. Today, he sat down with three journalists, all members of the National Association of Black Journalists, during its annual convention in what became a combative interview, one that many members voiced their disappointment over. With protesters outside the Hilton Chicago and members of the National Association of Black Journalists growing restless inside, the Q&A with former President Donald Trump began more than an hour after its scheduled time. ABC News' Rachel Scott kicking off the questions.
You've attacked black journalists, calling them a loser, saying the questions that they ask are, quote, stupid and racist. You've had dinner with a white supremacist at your Mar-a-Lago resort. So my question, sir, now that you are asking black supporters to vote for you, why should black voters trust you after you have used language like that?
And the former president showing his anger.
Are you with ABC? Because I think they're a fake news network, a terrible network. And I think it's disgraceful that I came here in good spirit. I love the black population of this country.
Trump's history of that kind of vitriol directed at black female journalists in particular is what set off a backlash from many NABJ members when they learned he'd be at the convention.
I was disappointed in how it turned out. Trump manipulated the situation, came out very hostile, a lot of hostile questions, a lot of hostile accusations to divert the reporters from doing their job. And you didn't learn a lot more than you already knew about Donald Trump and how he felt about African Americans.
Questions spanned from inflation.
Inflation is a country buster. It breaks every country. And we had, in my opinion, the worst inflation we've had. They say it's 58 years, but I think it's much more than that.
To immigration.
Many of these people are coming in from mental institutions, from prisons, from jails. They're gang members in other countries. Other countries are setting loose their prisoners. They're opening up their prisons and their mental institutions.
While PolitiFact posted live fact-checking online. On his last point about immigration, PolitiFact says it's already rated this claim, quote, pants on fire, meaning quite false. When asked about whether his opponent, Vice President Kamala Harris, is a, quote, DEI hire, he questioned her racial identity.
She was always of Indian heritage, and she was only promoting Indian heritage. I didn't know she was black until a number of years ago when she happened to turn black, and now she wants to be known as black. So I don't know, is she Indian or is she black?
She has always identified as a black woman.
I respect either one. I respect either one, but she obviously doesn't.
PolitiFact says that claim, too, is false.
That was probably the most revealing moment of the event. I haven't heard him say that before. It's a ridiculous charge. I think he's trying to imply that she's not black enough because he feels that that will hurt her with black voters.
And to be clear, Laura Washington, who you just heard from there, said that she did support Trump's appearance initially, as it's something that NABJ has done in the past. NABJ's president, Ken Lemon, says the organization is in talks with the Harris campaign as well to arrange a Q&A with her, either virtually or in person, in September. For more of Trump's comments at today's event, as well as reaction from protesters, you can check out our website. That's WTTW.com/news. Up next, Chicagoans react to Sonya Massey's death.
Chicago Tonight, Black Voices, is made possible in part by the support of these donors.
Thank you.
There's growing outrage from the White House on down following the release of body cam footage showing a downstate police officer fatally shooting 36-year-old Sonya Massey earlier this month. Sangamon County Sheriff's Deputy Sean Grayson has been fired and charged with first-degree murder. But as more details emerge about Grayson's history, community advocates and activists are demanding answers and action. That includes here in Chicago, where Reverend Al Sharpton and others gathered at New Mount Pilgrim Missionary Baptist Church last night as part of a nationwide call for justice. Joining us now with more are some of the organizers of that event, Reverend Ira Acree, pastor of Greater St. John Bible Church, Elise Edwards, a faith-based community organizer and a member of the 11th District Police Council, and David Cherry, Senior Vice President for Youth and Community Development at the All Stars Project. Thanks to all three of you for joining us. Reverend Acree, let's start with you, please. The Justice for Sonya Massey event last night. Tell me a little bit about that event, and what would you say were some of the key messages or takeaways from last night?
Well, it was a great event. We had faith leaders, residents, and we had other victims of police violence, murders being there. Families were there. And so Chicago had an opportunity to weigh in. Many of us, we had flashbacks of the horrific, ugly, vicious police murder of Laquan McDonald. And we thought that was something, to see this young boy, 17 years old, get shot 16 times. But honestly, when I saw that video, and many of us were in the room, when we saw that video, we thought of Laquan McDonald on steroids. It was agonizing. And many people were just frustrated about that because this woman is in the sanctity and sanctuary of her own household. And the person who is an officer of the peace comes and guns her down. So we were very enthused to be able to weigh in and to add to the national cry for justice for Sonya Massey. And just like others, we believe that this person should have never been on this force from the get-go. Six times he has been moved in from four right. different police agencies
Word
in 4 years.
That, correct. He's been in multiple different law enforcement agencies until he got to Sangamon County. Elise Edwards, what do you think justice for Sonya Massey looks like?
Well, so it looks like a lot of things. I do want to focus on one thing that would probably help all of us as, you know, community members. There is a thing in Illinois called the Safety Act, and that Safety Act is not just no cash bail, but it also helps where there are officers that does participate in misconduct. It has been lengthened, or, you know, they put more, like, categories in what they would call decertification, but it allows those officers to be decertified, which means that you take their authority away. They're no longer allowed to actually have a gun. And when they try to move around to other agencies within Illinois, that stops them from having that gun and the authority that comes with their badge.
Almost equivalent to sort of a do not hire list where they can't be hired again as a police officer, as a law enforcement officer. We have some video from earlier in that encounter between Massey and Deputy Grayson that does not show the shooting, but here's a bit of that.
Please, God, I'm trying to get help, y'all, but...
What do you need help with?
Nothing, I just... Please, God, I don't know what to do.
Do with what?
Huh?
What do you need help with?
Nothing. I just wanted to see if y'all could help me.
What do you want help with?
Huh?
What do you want help with?
I heard somebody outside.
Yeah, we checked your house, we checked your backyard, I walked all the way through all these backyards, we checked your front yard.
We didn't see nobody,
so... Nobody's out here.
David Cherry, you know, we watched that encounter and even a little bit later on into that encounter, and it seems clear that, you know, she's disoriented. She needs help. She can't quite express what it is that she needs, though. How do you see all of that and sort of like the lapse in police training that happened there, that it escalated from the point that we just saw to what we all know happened later?
Yeah, I think the whole thing is just absolutely outrageous. You know, when you look at, you know, you have these really two big burly men who showed up at her home, and instead of providing comfort because she was concerned about a possible intruder, instead of saying, you know, let's make sure all the windows and doors are locked before we leave, and if anything happens, we'll come back and provide more comfort if necessary, you know, one of them takes out his revolver and shoots her. And it's just absolute outrageous to see this happen here in 2024, Brandis? And, you know, a big part of the problem is there's been a lack of accountability in these cases. So families and members of the community are traumatized, one, by the actual shooting, but then we're traumatized again by the criminal justice system. You know, sometimes prosecutors won't bring charges. If prosecutors decide to bring charges, they're often acquittals by the jury or judge, or light sentences by the judge. You know, we had Kia Boyd, a young black woman who was killed here in Chicago several years ago. Nothing was done about that. You hear about Breonna Taylor killed in Louisville, Kentucky. Nothing was done about that. In fact, one of the officers who was fired is now working at another department. And this is a pattern. And so there's the thing about justice is that you will take that dangerous officer off the street, and then also serves as a deterrence so that this guy, he took his weapon out because he's not worried that anything's going to happen to him. Even though he's been charged, he does not, based on history, does not feel that he's going to serve any jail time for killing this black
woman. So you're saying he felt confident in that moment?
Yeah,
that,
because the criminal justice system protects him. Yeah.
David, I also think not only can we blame them, but the blood of Sonya Massie is also on the judicial system as
yes.
well as Congress, because
yes.
we had an opportunity to pass the George yes. Floyd Act.
Yes.
And that did not happen.
Right.
A do-nothing Congress did not pass that legislation. And if they had passed that legislation, we would now have a national police misconduct registry
yeah.
where they track all police misconduct and disciplinary actions. And that would prohibit a police officer from going from one jurisdiction to another without accountability.
And I want to say just one more thing. I'm sorry that listening to that conversation with the officer and with Sonya Massie, that the aggression that was there. So, you know, we're talking about training, you know, de-escalating. And aside from that, we really want to free up the time of officers when it is a mental health crisis or, you know, they feel like someone can't express themselves, that they call someone else. And I felt looking at that video, there was some impatience or, you know, talking down, just mm-hmm. aggression that did
That's
not
right.
need to be there.
That's
so,
right.
yeah, we felt, you know, her in many ways.
That's right.
So following the release of the video, Sangamon County Sheriff Jack Campbell, Grayson said he called Grayson's actions, quote, unjustifiable and reckless. We know that Grayson has been fired. He has been charged with first degree murder along with a couple of other charges. Elise, are you satisfied with that? Is that enough?
I mean, I definitely want to see the history of this officer. I mean, that's me first and foremost. But were there red flags prior to this that they ignored? Were there things that happened in his career that they could have said, you know what, just in that, not the fact that he went to six different legal, you know, law enforcement agencies in 4 years, but with that particular, you know, law enforcement agency, were there red flags that they did not catch? And if there were, then the blood is on their hands as well.
So Teresa Haley, president of the NAACP Springfield branch, here's what she had to say after the results of Sonya Massie's autopsy were released.
As I watch the video again, I have to reiterate, black women are under attack. We fear for our lives as well. Again, we used to tell our sons, our husbands, our nephews, the men in our lives, to be careful and what to do when you're stopped by the police. Now we have to tell ourselves, our daughters, our mothers, our sisters, our cousins.
Elise Edwards, back to you. Is this the new reality? Is this something that is? Should we be having the same talk with women? Because in the case of Breonna Taylor, she was sleeping in her bed that night. There was really nothing that she could have done differently.
There are some things, even when you have conversations, you cannot be prepared for. But I do believe there is a need for us to talk to all people of color. Like, honestly, at the church last night, at the rally, I just sat in tears. I just sat in tears. Everything that went forth, it's not just black females, it's not just black males. You know what I mean? It's transgender. It's like literally anyone who is in black skin is under attack. And I feel like that is unfortunate.
Reverend Acri, you mentioned the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act. What would the family like to see going forward?
Well, the father made it very clear that the sheriff should resign. But the truth of the matter is, maybe he won't resign, but there are other ways to get rid of him. I was looking it up today because he was elected. So he has the power to say, I'm not going anywhere. But he could be fired. He could be fired by the governor. He could be recalled by the electorate. Or he can be impeached. But I think we can't sit back and wait on him to resign. We must keep on putting the pressure because these people are elected. And this is a great neglect of duty. He must be held accountable.
David Cherry, 10 seconds left. What would you like to see?
It really is accountability. Accountability for the officer who needs to be prosecuted and punished and imprisoned for what he did. And accountability for anybody who was responsible for hiring him. Six departments in 4 years is unacceptable. Somewhere along the line, someone should have said, no more. You can't be a police officer.
So many
anymore.
Different agencies
right.
considered, or,
right.
considered
it's
a red
it's
flag.
All about accountability. Right.
Can I just add this? If we can't get the George Floyd Act at the national level, let's get the Sonya Massey Act here in Illinois.
Exactly.
Some
right.
courageous state legislator step up and make it happen.
Exactly. All right, we'll have to leave it there. My thanks to the three of you, Reverend Ira Acree, Elise Edwards, and David Cherry. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Up next, an update on the summer uptick in COVID cases. Public health officials are warning COVID cases are on the rise. Nationally, we're seeing an increase in positive viral activity this summer, and Chicago is no different. And with the start of the new school year right around the corner, just what is the latest COVID guidance? Here to answer that and much more is Dr. Simbo Ige, Commissioner of the Chicago Department of Public Health. Dr. Ige, welcome back. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
So describe this increase that we're currently seeing in COVID-19 cases. How concerning is this to public health professionals?
Well, this is reminiscent of some of the patterns we saw in 2023 and 2022. Summer cases start to inch up a little, and we're seeing that happen. And we expect that this will continue until the fall and the winter. So, but we have good news. And now we know what to do. We have tools that are effective. So we want people, again, to be reminded that we can keep COVID at bay with vaccines. And so we want people to be prepared for the fall, for the winter, by getting the protection that they need. Vaccines, get treatment, and stay home if you're sick. And if you have to interact with people after you've been sick, wear your mask. You know, these are things that we've been saying for many years. They work. And we know that because last season we were able to keep death from COVID down. And we hope to be able to replicate the same success this season.
What do we know about the cause of this current increase?
COVID, you know, it's been a very, very smart virus. It keeps mutating. It keeps developing new variants. So there's a new variant that's out there, flirt variant, that is causing this new uptick in cases that we're seeing. So that's one of the reasons why we're seeing this. But again, this is a virus that has been very adept at you know, changing its shapes and its expressions. But the good news here is it's not leading to more severe disease, so that's good news. And we know how to keep it at bay. The vaccine still works for this variant, so that's also good news.
And you said, you know, this is sort of a pattern that we've seen over the last couple of summers, but it's a bit too early to tell if this is going to be a summer virus, if kind of like the flu was sort of a fall and winter virus.
Right. It's with COVID, we try to be cautious about being too, confident about how it expresses because the variants just keep popping up. But some of the patterns we're seeing in the southern hemisphere in Australia, where they are in the peak of their own season, we're keeping a close eye on that to sort of prep for how we handle our season. And it seems like, yes, the flood variant is leading to more cases, but not more severe. And the new vaccine that we hope will be ready in September will be effective in keeping it at bay.
The flirt variant. It sounds cute, but but it's not.
It is not.
How is CDPH keeping track of these numbers?
Well, our mainstay right now is the wastewater surveillance because we no longer have the comprehensive testing program, et cetera, and we are no longer getting reports on hospitalization, et cetera. So we are tracking across the city wastewater. That helps us detect what the activity is for COVID in the wastewater. And that's how we know when things are inching up and when things are stabilizing. And now things are going up.
Okay, and just to show folks at home, so the week ending July 19th, it started July 15th, the test positivity rate in Chicago was 9.8%, compared with the week before, 7.6%. Do you expect that this will continue to grow? And also, you know, put that in perspective for us a little bit, because we're not used to hearing these numbers with regularity the way we were, you know, several years ago when they were a lot higher.
Right. I think what is important to focus on right now will be the wastewater activity that helps us see what is happening writ large. The testing, there's not everybody testing, so test positivity depends on how many people are getting tested. So the more comprehensive picture is from the wastewater surveillance. And yes, cases are inching up. We have seen that pattern in other parts of the world. We expect that it will come here. So we want folks to be cautious to start to take precautions now and not wait until the peak of the season. We expect numbers will continue to rise. So we want people to know that right now, if you have any respiratory symptom at all, you don't have to know for certain it is COVID. Take the same precautions. The same precautions for flu, the same precautions for RSV, the same precautions for COVID. That's the recommendation right now, which is if you are sick, please stay home until you feel better. 24 hours after your symptoms abate, you can go about your normal business, but please keep your mask on for up to 5 days afterwards. And if you feel particularly sick, you have a fever, you're having difficulty breathing, there is treatment available. Please get it ASAP. So those are the main tools that we have, and we want people to feel reassured that we now know how to control COVID, and we want everybody to be aware of what these tools and to use them.
Can we expect that the next vaccine, the next iteration of the vaccine, will address this variant?
Oh, yes. The current vaccine still is a little protective, but the new version of it that will be available in summer will be tailored for this particular variant, and so will be even more effective.
CDPH, you all are still advocating for federal COVID funding. What would that be used for, and has the federal government given you any indication that it will provide more funding?
Well, it's not likely that we're getting more funding. COVID funding is actually depleting, and it's actually going away. And one of the changes that's really important for people to know right now is we no longer have funding for free vaccines like we did last year. The Bridge program ends in August 2024, which means that if you don't have health insurance right now, the options for free vaccinations are limited. So we will still be providing some free vaccines, but not as much as we had last year. The stock will be limited. So we want folks who are insured to please engage with their pharmacies, with their providers for their vaccines. And we will also be complementing that at our free clinics. The rest of the COVID-related funding has been mostly towards COVID recovery, more than the COVID vaccine itself. And we will have that funding until 2026. Some of the upper funding will be available till 2026, but supporting wider programs, mental health recovery, et cetera, and not just the COVID vaccination program.
Okay, and before we let you go, about 30 seconds, CDPH just started a new Operation SOS. What can you tell us about that?
Oh, it's been fantastic. You know, this is our approach of getting resources to people where they are at. And we are doing door knocking because about 30% of the overdose deaths that we have seen in Chicago is concentrated in five neighborhoods. So there are about 1,300 blocks. We're going to go door to door. It's a 10-week campaign to get resources to people. We are tired of people dying from preventable causes. And last year, more than 1,300 people died from opioid overdoses, more than the number of homicides and road traffic accidents
combating
combined.
Opioid overdoses.
Right. So
we'll have to have you back to talk more about that going forward. Dr. Simbo Ige, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. And that is our show for tonight. Join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 10. Protests in Venezuela following their presidential election, what it could mean for the U.S. and Chicago. And it's a creative take on an Italian classic. We grab a slice at Novel Pizza in Pilsen. Now for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, Black Voices, I'm Brandis Friedman. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a personal injury law firm dedicated to preserving the dignity and rights of all individuals.